Aquí de lunes a jueves. You
the safari park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry! Larry!
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name, buried in cheers and applause? I think not. So, what metric do you use to calibrate your life? I'm not talking about money or stuff or power or prestige. I'm talking about what really matters. Fun. It's Memorial Day weekend, and unless you're on the other side of the equator, this is the unofficial start of summer. And isn't that when we derive most of our best giggles? It's when we take vacations, long ones as kids and not so long ones as adults. But still, summer really kicks the other three seasons' ass when it comes to good times, doesn't it? And to me, growing up in New York, summer meant mostly one thing, the beach. Now, some people, they'd head for the mountains, maybe the Catskills or the Poconos, and those are okay, but never really offered the pure, unadulterated ecstasy of the shore. The mountains had shitloads of bugs and poison ivy, and to swim in a lake was all right, but you never knew what the hell was on the bottom. And worst of all, no waves, not ever. And there is nothing quite like being tossed around like a stuffed toy by a 5 or 6 foot curler. I can actually recall my very first trip to the beach. I was maybe 3 or 4 years old. It was a perfect day. The old man had grown up on the shore and loved it. He could swim like a dolphin, effortlessly and barely making a ripple. So we get there and park the car, grab the blanket and the beach bag, and pretty soon he's staked out a nice spot. Everyone gets greased up with Coppertone, then tears into the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches Mom had packed. Then my older brother and I pull out the pail and shovels and bury Dad in the sand. After about an hour of that noise, he was more than ready for a swim. So we go down to the water's edge. The waves are probably only 2 or 3 feet high, but at that time, so was I. So they looked like tsunamis to me. And the water seemed pretty damn cold, too. And I start to backpedal a little. And then a big one comes rolling in and knocks me right off my feet. Dad laughs, and I tell him, I don't like this, and I'm going back to the blanket. But then I see him and my brother splashing around and catching a couple of waves, and it looks like fun. But I'm still standing on the sand, and the old man keeps yelling, come on, get in here! But I'm not going anywhere. So Dad comes and takes me by the hand and walks me into deeper water. It's cold and rough, and I try to pull away, but he won't let go of my arm. Now I'm about waist deep, and the foam is swirling around me, and I want to head for the blanket, and to be honest, I'm behaving like a bit of a wimp. The old man will have none of that, and that's when a big wave rolls in, and now I'm shoulder deep in cold sea foam, and he shouts at me over the roar of the waves, do you know what time it is? Christ, I'm only 4 years old. I don't have a watch, and I can't tell time anyway. Just a week earlier, my brother Jimmy had taught me how to tie my own shoes, and Dad wants to know what time it is. That's when I feel his hand on top of my head, and he says, it's time to go down for a glass of beer. And he gives my head a mighty shove, and boom, I am under the fucking sea, looking at blurry green bubbles. And just when I wonder if I will die, he hoists me out and onto his shoulders. And I'm crying, and he walks straight into the deeper surf and puts me on his back and tells me to hang on. And I wrap my arms around his neck in a death grip, and he gives me my first ever ride on a wave on his back, and it is absolutely glorious. And as we're propelled, almost onto dry sand, before I hop off his back, I'm yelling, do that again! And I am over my fear of the surf and the ocean. If my father were around today and did that, some fucktard would record it on his or her iPhone and report the old man to Child Protective Services, and he'd be labeled an abusive father, and maybe I'd be taken from him, and he'd be a viral YouTube villain, and fuck every single moron on this planet who thinks that way. My dad was the best. Clearly that memory was strongly imprinted on my mind. In fact, to this day, when I pour a cold one into a Pilsner or a tall mug and I see that white foam, I think of Dad at the beach, and I smile, and I miss him. So as a kid, the old man used to gas up the Ford or the Chevy. We'd head for the fabulous Jersey Shore, some years for a long weekend and some years for an entire summer. I've not been to the Jersey Shore in quite a few years, and places can change, and quickly, but as a kid, it was a true cornucopia of adventure. You could get honky-tonks and cheesy amusement parks with the riffraff, or you could find stately mansions with butlers holding tea services. It was just a matter of a few miles. I pretty much covered it all, from Asbury Park right down to Cape May at the Delaware border, and each little town along the strip had its own vibe and character. Of course, in the daytime, it was all about the sea and sand. Not too many board riders then, it was mostly body surfing and rubber rafts. And we needed damn little in the way of gear or accoutrement. A towel, a tube of Coppertone, a few bucks in your cut-off jean shorts, and you were good to go. A day at the beach would arouse every sense, beginning with your nose. In the Northeast, you can smell the ocean from miles away. Not only is the Atlantic saltier than the Pacific, the coastline is jagged with loads of inlets and coves. That makes for vast marshes and lush marine life, and so you get these fantastic aromas depending on the tides. So we'd hit the beach in mid-morning and ride wave after wave. Sometimes at low tide, if you weren't paying attention, you'd ride a few combers and the current would push you up the beach in the next town. It was a glorious time to be a kid. We'd hop on our bikes after breakfast, and Mom didn't expect us home until dinner time, and we were maybe 11 or 12. I bet that doesn't happen often now. Every kid has to be supervised and monitored 24/7 for his or her safety. And if they're alone for 5 minutes, they probably have to check in by phone or text. How fucked up. We had limitless freedom. The only boundaries to our days were the power of our own legs to propel us to our destination via stingray bike. By midday, hunger would override the desire to catch one more wave, and we'd be forced to retreat to the boardwalk. It was the perfect man-made artificial lowbrow yin to the divinely engineered yang of the mighty Atlantic. The boardwalk held all manner of vice, tailor-made to lure young dudes and dudettes. Gustatory triumphs like chocolate or vanilla coconut patties. Yeah, think a huge burger made of coconut and covered in black or white. Footlong hot dogs seductively rolling over and over on hot stainless steel rollers. Quart-sized containers of sugary Coke and root beer. So as we stuffed our maws with nitrate-filled mystery meats and washed them down with sufficient liquid sugar to throw a bison into a diabetic coma, we'd have to answer the siren call of the arcade. The arcade. Skee-ball and Wheels of Fortune, where you could win a stretched-neck Pepsi bottle or a blacklight poster. Pinball machines with masterpieces of artwork depicting Elvis and the Stones and AC/DC, and even better ones with impossibly pointy chicks, like the Playboy pinball machine with Hef bookended by bunnies, or the libido-inflaming Bride of Pinbot. No human female could be as pointy or as irresistible as she. Just listen to some of her siren calls.
I feel strange.
Oh, to be enfolded in those metallic arms, to be cheek to chromium cheek with her as her clicking fingers grabbed a fistful of hair as she moans into your ear.
You look good.
By the way, for newer listeners wondering about the term pointy, I invented it. And it refers to a certain type of female who is very much comprised of a collection of points. Her legs and fingers come to points, the corners of her eyes and mouth, perhaps her cheekbones, and of course, her boobs. Pointy chicks rule. It's just that simple. So pointy was Bride of Pinbot, I've included an image of her with this episode. Just visit thatlarryshow.com and wear safety glasses. Her points may stab your eyes. Guys were lined up several deep to take on the bride, and who could blame them? And when they'd lean into the machine for a tilt, well, rare was the occasion when you'd see a female playing that machine, and if you did, she was usually wearing a flannel shirt and Birkenstocks. And so, fortified by junk food and torqued up by high-fructose sugars, we'd return to our beach towels, adhering to the don't swim for an hour after eating myth. We really didn't give a shit about that, but by that time in the early afternoon, it was prime time for girl watching, and the Jersey Shore did not disappoint. Beauties of every variation in one pieces, two pieces, and thongs, and G-strings, oh, it was endless. Later in the day, after a shower and dinner, usually wolfed down, because when you're 12, eating is kind of a necessary distraction, isn't it? We go back to the beach for the amped-up thrills that only some darkness could provide. Then the neon cast a carnival glow over everything, and the girls became pointier as they swapped flip-flops for heels that would herald their approach and demand attention as they clicked along the boardwalk. And oh, that boardwalk itself was a sensory marvel. Preserved with tar, the scent would fill your nostrils as you walked along. The constant hiss of receding waves would be punctuated by the crump of a big one coming in. It was hypnotic. It was fantastic. It was the epitome of summer. In that particular summer, I wanted a boat in the worst way, but none was in my price range, which was zero. And the local firemen staged a raffle and sold tickets all summer long, first prize of which was a gleaming Boston Whaler with a big-ass Evinrude on the transom. Every time I had a buck that hadn't been taken from me by Bride of Pinbot, I'd buy another ticket. All summer long I eyed that boat and dreamed of filling it with bluefish or towing pointy babes around on water skis. It was almost as cool as a car, and best of all, you didn't need a license to drive one. Kids today get gypped on summer vacation. In my childhood, it was a solid 10 or 11 weeks, beginning late June and ending at the shittiest day on any calendar, Labor Day. Even the name is shit, heavy with commie overtones. I hate it. Today, kids are back in school in mid-August. That's bullshit. And the bullshitters claim we
need more school days if we are to be globally competitive.
Oh, really? How about fewer school days with better teaching and no time-wasting horseshit like Common Core? Fuck Common Core and fuck those who invented it. They're imbeciles. Even though 4th of July was firmly on the early side of summer, for me it was a double-edged sword. It was a reminder that summer was really well underway and time was ticking. But on the other hand, it meant kaboom. Even though fireworks were illegal, we still had no trouble getting them. And they were the real deal. Ash cans and cherry bombs and M80s with enough bang to blow an empty gallon paint can into the clouds. Ash cans, waterproof, which tossed over the side of a boat, would submerge and leave the bait fish stunned or dead on the surface. Just scoop them up and you're good to go for a day's fishing. We even had our own method of delaying fuses, perfect for missions of mischief. When you need to make a big noise and be blocks away when it blows, just light a cigarette and jam the unlit end onto the rigid fuse, set it down and walk away. In a few minutes, it's boom time. I recall cops once stopping us when we were setting off firecrackers. We thought we were in deep shit, but there were no arrests. They just took them away from us, no doubt to set off themselves with their kids. Today there are arrests and court dates and probably visits from Homeland fucking Security, because every 10-year-old boy with a pack of firecrackers is a potential terrorist, is he not? Our society is really fucked up. And oh, the safety factor. Yes, safety, safety, safety. You know, my friends and I all started playing with fireworks at the age of 7 or 8 and continued right through adulthood. And not one of us lost a finger or an eye or are hearing impaired. Because the Chinese put very clear and easy to understand 3-part instructions on every firework they make. 1, place on ground. 2, light fuse. 3, get away. Those who can't get the gist of that and wind up with 9 fingers, well, that's their problem, isn't it? But why should the rest of us be deprived of our fun? Because of assbag social engineers and the guardians of our safety. I'll handle my own safety, thank you, and fuck off. And so you, my beloved listeners and Patreonies, are doubtless wondering, where is the story in this episode? I shall not let you down. I have one, and here it is. It seemed the older I got, the farther south I ventured on the Jersey Shore. And so around age 19 or so, I discovered a fantastic playground way down the shore. They were called the Wildwoods. There was Wildwood, Wildwood Crest, and North Wildwood. We dug Wildwood Crest the most, because it was like a little and unsleazy Vegas by the sea. The motels were immense and had elaborate themes with decor to match. The Singapore Inn resembled a Chinese palace with pagoda architecture, and even little grace notes like doorknobs made of Chinese characters. Across the street, the mighty Admiral was nautical nirvana, all capstans and marlin spikes with a crow's nest. Even the door handles were little jib sails. The Wildwoods attracted a vast number of French Canadians, so many that a local radio station would, in summer, actually broadcast in French. And the French girls perhaps have a better understanding of the word pointy than any others on Earth. It was mind-blowing and eye-popping and, well, there's no describing it, really. Wildwood Crest was paradise. Pristine beach, perfect waves, killer kitschy lodging, and pointy French-Canadian girls everywhere. The only drawback was, it was a dry town. No liquor stores, no bars. However, a mere rock throw away were the other two Wildwoods, where they had liquor supermarkets the size of a Costco. And every Friday afternoon, there would be a massive traffic jam on the 2-lane main drag as everybody from dry Wildwood Crest would head north one town up to stock up on beer and booze for the weekend. A slight side note here, it was in Wildwood Crest where I got my first and really last lesson in drinking. I'd had plenty of beer, but never really any hard liquor, so I got myself a pint of Dewar's White Label Scotch, and in a display of manliness and inexperience, downed it like one would iced tea. Well, of course, I became violently ill in the night and was quite hungover the following day. You never forget that feeling of lying in a bed that refuses to stop spinning, no matter how firmly you apply the foot brake, a la Fred Flintstone. I did recover, and had learned a valuable lesson about my own pacing and capacities, and I can state that was the first and last time I was ever really drunk. You see, you can only get drunk by accident the first time. After that, it's a choice, isn't it? But back to our liquor run. On this particular excursion, I was with my pal Jimmy and his younger brother Kevin, who was maybe 15 or 16 at the time. Kevin was a card and down for any adventure. He had a memorable way of speaking. He didn't so much say his words as he spit them out. Nearly everything he said sounded like a curse. And Kevin had one of the most acerbic senses of humor of anyone I'd ever met. Every joke was a mean joke, and they were invariably funny as hell. So Jimmy's at the wheel of his wide track in Pontiac Catalina. I'm riding shotgun, and Kevin is in the back. All windows are fully open so we can enjoy the smells, sounds, and especially the sights of pointy French-Canadian chicks without so much as 1/8 of an inch of automotive safety glass to obstruct our vision. And we're making a list of the liquid refreshments we'll need to carry us through the next several days. The traffic is bumper to bumper and rubber banding due to the traffic lights. It would crawl for a while, the light would change. You could attain maybe 20 miles an hour and then have to throw out the anchor again as the light up ahead turned red. Suddenly, Kevin exclaims,
"Look at that fucking guy."
And up ahead on the right is a jogger, but no ordinary jogger. He wore no shorts and Nikes, no. This guy looked as if he had popped out of some time machine from ancient Rome. No, that's not quite accurate because Romans did not have access to steroids. The guy was the size of a parade float, muscles on top of muscles in that bloated fake physique that only chemistry can provide. And he's actually wearing some kind of gladiator loincloth and espadrilles with the laces snaking right up his massively cut calves. And he's got that Hercules beard, you know, the kind that skirts the jawline and is trimmed so precisely it looks like it was applied with an ink marker. He looks like the star of all those old Gladiator and Hercules movies from the 50s, that Steve Reeves guy, except he's twice the size of Steve. And so the light changes, and we start to move at a decent clip, and as we roll by this Romanesque bodybuilder parade float of a man, we all start to laugh because his appearance is really comical. And Kevin shouts at him,
"Hey, Hercules!"
And I look behind and I see the guy grinning. That's probably the nicest compliment he's ever been paid. He's spent years in the gym and thousands on Dianabol, and at last somebody has called him the name of the mythological figure he has worked so hard to emulate. The guy is beaming. He gives us a nod and a little wave. But this is Kevin, and I know there's another shoe to drop. No, not a shoe, more like a verbal daisy cutter. And I hear Kevin inhale for the delivery.
"Nice skirt, girly man."
The grin slides off Herc's face. His eyes bulge. Kevin's comment hit him like a harpoon, right in the ego. Hercules shouts,
"You motherfucking punks!"
And he starts to sprint, just as the traffic backs down. I half expect the asphalt to pucker with every footfall from this freak. I hear Jimmy mutter Jesus Christ because this guy looks like he could tear the door off the car with a pinky. And he's gaining on us and gaining on us. And I say lock the doors and roll up the windows, which is absolutely futile. We feel like we're in one of those jeeps in Jurassic Park with T-Rex chasing us. And now this fucking crazy maniac is about 10 yards off our tail and closing fast. He's in the middle of the lane behind us, and he lunges with his fist outstretched to pound the rear deck. He'll probably flip the Pontiac like a tiddlywink. At that instant, traffic moves forward, and Jimmy hits the gas hard enough to chirp the tires. Hercules' fist missed the trunk lid and lands on the rear bumper. And he loses his balance and sprawls face first on the roadbed. And Kevin's head pops out the rear window once again.
"Hey, trade those sandals for sneakers, you fucking overgrown twink!"
Herc is back on his feet with steam shooting from both ears. We can hear him growl some threat as he again takes off after us. Now we cannot stop laughing. Herc is again pounding the asphalt, and now there's a trickle of blood running down both his shins where he fell trying to punch the Pontiac. We're cruising along at a pretty good clip, maybe 25 miles an hour, and have opened a comfortable lead between us and the loincloth psychotic. And then traffic starts to slow again. But not Herc. He must be putting in some road work along with the bench presses, and goddamn if he isn't gaining on us. And now his face is purple with rage. The guy has triple homicide on his mind. Our speed slows to 15, 10, 5 miles an hour. Behind us, Herc clocks along. He's covered in sweat. His massive chest is heaving. The cords in his neck stand out like rope. His eyes are ablaze with murderous fury. Suddenly, Jimmy pulls a lug wrench from under the seat and hands it to me, saying he'll probably attack on your side first, and I'm thinking, I don't need a lug wrench. I need an elephant gun. Now Herc is maybe 15 feet off the bumper. Should I maybe just open the door and wail on him with a wrench? We're dead stopped. It's on. I say a silent prayer. I got the wrench in a death grip, ready to bury it in Herc's skull. Probably not a vital area, but suddenly, the car lurches forward again as traffic begins to move. We gasp. Jimmy tells Kevin to shut the fuck up. Too late. Kevin's head is out the rear window once again.
Hey, Herc. You know your girly legs are bleeding?
We move ahead, but finally Herc is out of gas. He doubles over and pukes on the shoulder. Guys who are 5'10 and weigh over 300 are just not built for distance. It was over. Kevin was the victor, but for luck and maybe divine intervention, we could all have been crime statistics. Hey, everybody. Thanks for hanging with me again. We've got a fantastic bonus episode coming up, and we'll post it tomorrow, maybe Thursday at the latest. Part 3 of the Vengeance is Ours trilogy. Did we demolish the loathsome Tommy as we had promised? Was our plot undiscovered, or did we bring down hell itself upon us? There's only one way to find out, because it's only available on Patreon. Slide over to patreon.com/thatlarryshow and join the dojo. You'll be part of an exclusive crew that knows what time it is and takes no shit. Need some help? We may have a sensei here who can fix what ails you. Drop us a line at thatlarryshow@gmail.com. Or call us at 302-71-LARRY. Follow us on Twitter at That Larry Show. And don't forget to stop by the dojo store and pick up one of our banging t-shirts. Go to thatlarryshow.com and click the dojo store link. And so, as we lurch headlong into this summer, let us all be mindful of the elements that comprise a summer you can treasure all of your life. 1. Pointy chicks. Without them, there is no summer, or any other season. 2. The beach. It's the cradle of life and the place that makes summer, summer. 3. Steroid bloated freaks in loincloths and Roman sandals. Whenever possible, mock them mercilessly. Just be sure you have a clear road ahead when you do, or an armored car. I'll see you next Tuesday, right here at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment. And until that time, take no shit.